couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show, the only new movie for the week is Glass, but I'm also going to be covering some other movies close from Netflix. I'm also going to look at the older movies, one's just a week old, Replicas, and the one from Christmas, Holmes and Watson. Finally got a chance to check those out. And finally, a look back at Freebie and the Bean. Why? Because it's the Fat Guys at the Movie Show. We talk about movies here. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring David Gordon Green's Halloween. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news I want to talk about is a little bit late because it was last weekend, so we've had a whole week to go past this, but I wanted to mention really quickly the Critics' Choice Movie Awards were last weekend. I voted in them. Not everything I voted for won, but there were some interesting things that happened in the winners. I'm not going to go through the whole rundown of everything, but the specifics I want to talk about is Roma. Roma won Best Picture, Best Foreign Language Film, Best Director, and Best Cinematography. In my opinion, this puts it in the catbird seat to win at the Oscars. We haven't even had the Oscar nominations yet, but that's what I think is going to happen. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it does with Best Picture and Best Foreign Language Film. I don't even know if it's eligible for one or the other, or both. That's very possible, and it could win both, very much so. The reason I think Roma, aside from the fact that it has some momentum now, it's one of the few films out there that doesn't have some level of controversy to it. Of course, Green Book has controversy to it. A lot of people are concerned about the real life thing and whether or not it's accurate, and then there's the question of whether it's really racially sensitive, but this is the one that's kind of protected. Somehow it's in this little bubble that's free of controversy. It doesn't have, or like a Bohemian Rhapsody, everybody complaining about Bryan Singer's involvement. That causes a problem for Bohemian Rhapsody to really win big anywhere else at this point. Roma's insulated from that. The other thing I think's interesting is the tie between Glenn Close and Lady Gaga. Glenn Close, of course, for The Wife, and Lady Gaga for Star is Born for Best Actress. And I find that interesting because the Golden Globes gave it to Close, and I think Close is really in line to win, but also Lady Gaga, but there's also people who don't want to give it to a first-timer. That's what happened, of course, when Julia Roberts was up for Pretty Woman, even though that wasn't an award-winning performance, in my opinion. I think that this is going to be interesting to see who actually wins. This is a horse race between the two of them now. So this is going to be interesting rolling into the Oscar nominations, which come out next week. Another piece of news, not really news, I just want to give a little bit of a shout-out to Glenda R., somebody who sent me an email because I was talking about Richard Linklater last week, and I was saying I wasn't a huge fan of his movies. I just am not a big fan of Richard Linklater's stuff. And she reminded me of the film Last Flag Flying, which came out, I think, 2 years ago. And it's about Steve Carell and Lawrence Fishburne. Oh, and I'm blanking on who the other person is. But it's these three guys who are getting together because Carell's character's son was killed in action, and it's him going to retrieve the body. And that's actually a really good movie. And Glenda's right. You're absolutely right. That's one of the movies that Linklater directed that I liked. And I think that's an interesting example of it's not his typical type of movie. And maybe that's what I like. You know, the stuff like the Dazed and Confused story, I'm not a huge fan of. But yeah, Last Flag Flying, that's another Linklater film. So yes, corrected there. Thank you, Glenda, for pointing that out. Finally, the piece of news that has been rumbling through the internet and online film communities is Jason Reitman is going to be directing a Ghostbusters sequel for 2020. Now, this is nothing to do with the new Ghostbusters, not the female Ghostbusters, the remake back in 2016. Instead, it's supposed to actually be a sequel to Ghostbusters 2. Essentially, this is Ghostbusters 3, but it'll be interesting. Not a whole lot of details have emerged. There have been some rumors, and this comes from IGN, which is reporting on what we've got this covered. And then I'm just going to read the quote from the article from IGN, because this is a horrifying detail, if that's really true. Two of the main characters in this sequel to the original movie will be kids. Reportedly, there will be a 13-year-old boy and a 12-year-old girl. Okay, that's a little cheap. Maybe they're trying to go for Stranger Things feel. But wait, the source also states that the boy is curious about conspiracy theories and the unknown and has a habit of narrating his own life. Oh, really? That's what we're going to end up with. This sounds terrible so far. But wait, there's more. It's said that at some point during the course of the film, he'll befriend the girl, who's acutely intelligent, but not great with emotions. In other words, this is your very typical stock character who's got autism or is in the spectrum that they're going to not make a very good portrayal of autistic people and to use it as a plot point rather than actually dealing with the issue, something like what they did with the Predator. Finally, the line says, quote, reportedly, her shtick is voicing her observation in a deadpan fashion to humorous effect. Kill me now, because that sounds awful. That sounds like they said, oh, let's take Wednesday Addams from the Addams Family and make her an autistic girl and put her in a new Ghostbusters movie. This sounds like a mess. And the thing with Jason Reitman, he came on strong. He had some good movies at the beginning. Thank You for Smoking, Juno, Up in the Air. These were good movies. But boy, you look at his recent filmography, stuff like Tully, which was terrible, or Men, Women, and Children, which was god-awful, or Labor Day, which was painful. His recent filmography is kind of crap. Not just kind of crap, it's total crap. I don't care that you're the son of the guy who directed the original Ghostbusters. This sounds like it's going to stink. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to talk about is John Wick 3 Parabellum. It opens on May 17th.
Do you expect him to make it out?
A $14 million bounty on his head. Everyone in the city wants a piece of it. I say the odds are about even. Doc, 5 seconds.
John Wick, excommunicado, in effect, in 3, 2, 1.
And away we go.
I'm fine with the John Wick movies. I'm okay with big shoot-em-up action movies. This is sort of a throwback to the 80s and 90s action films. But, oh gosh, I don't know. Maybe they're going to run this into the ground too much. This reminds me a little bit of the Taken series, where the first one was really good, and the second one wasn't bad, and then the third one was kind of terrible, and they were just circling the drain. I don't know. Maybe the overtop action will be fine. Who knows? I'm not quite sold on this one yet. The next one I want to talk about really quickly is Spider-Man Far From Home, which opens on July 5th.
Planning a trip?
Mm-hmm. Going to Europe. School trip.
Get your passport. Peter Parker here to pick up a passport, please.
Mini toothpaste?
Mm-hmm.
Pack your suit.
I just want to go on my trip with my friends. Europe doesn't really need a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
So nice to finally meet you, Spider-Man.
I think Nick Fury just hijacked our summer vacation.
Are you going to step up or not?
This looks good. I mean, it looks like another decent Spider-Man movie. Yes, it's going to be gadgetry and you got the wingsuit and the gliding. And I know that that's one of the things that people have complained about with this new cinematic Spider-Man, that he's got a little bit too many gadgets, that he is overdone, that he doesn't have just a costume and he doesn't rely on his specific spider powers. But here's my thing. If he can have web shooters that are not genetic, that are these little devices, why not have other devices in his utility belt, so to speak? I think that that's completely fair. Granted, Into the Spider-Verse is going to be one heck of a movie to beat as one of the better Spider-Man movies, but I think you can have different types of Spider-Man movies going on. That's what the comic books do all the time. It looks pretty decent. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's interesting that you've got Jake Gyllenhaal in the movie. You don't hear him in the trailer I played, but at one point, I don't know, he plays a character that comes in there. But what's interesting about Jake Gyllenhaal is Jake Gyllenhaal was originally reported to possibly take over for Tobey Maguire when they stopped doing those movies over 10 years ago. So yeah, he finally got into a Spider-Man movie. It just, he's not in the Spider-Man suit. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about replicas and Holmes and Watson.
Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size. Catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I'm going to jump right into the movie reviews here. I've got some reviews for movies that are actually already out in the theaters. One of them came out last week. The other one came out at Christmas. The first one I want to hit is Replicas. And the reason I want to hit that is because I missed it last week. I just wasn't able to see it. I figured I'd catch it this week and talk about it because it's been getting some interesting buzz, being that it's getting terrible buzz. And I kind of have this morbid curiosity because I thought the idea was kind of clever and cool. And I figured, why not? Check this movie out. And plus, there was only one movie opening this week, and that's Glass. And I can't talk for an entire hour about Glass. Honestly, it's not that interesting. So let's talk about Replicas. When his family is killed in a car accident, a scientist clones them to be able to live with them again.
William, something's not right with me. Tell me the truth.
There was a crash. You and the kids died. I brought you back.
There is a reason human cloning is banned.
I'm dead.
We stole millions of dollars worth of bionine equipment.
I hope you're ready to go to jail.
Those three subjects are our property.
Again, this movie has a great idea. It's been done before, these kind of, I brought my loved ones back to life. I mean, this is an archetype that goes all the way back, you know, decades and centuries even in terms of stories. But it's all about execution. The thing is, the execution in this film is terrible. It is awful. It's a great idea. And it's one of the interesting ideas that is so poorly done. They throw these things in there into the story that are unnecessary complications. Like, the whole thing is he's got three kids. And his wife and his three kids get killed in this car crash. And when he is going to bring them back to life, he can only do three of them. He can't do four. So he has to get rid of one. He has to choose not to bring back one of them. And it's the one that he chooses. What he does is he's like, well, then I can go back and I can delete all the memories of the other people. And I'm like, there doesn't even think this through. It's not even logically thought through of, well, wait a minute. Even though people may not have direct memories, there's going to be photographs. There's going to be toys. There's going to be books. There's going to be things that there's going to be school papers. There's going to be the fact that the kid's in school and nobody knows where they are. And people are going to be like, oh, hey, how's Zoe? Oh, Zoe? I don't know who Zoe is. It's not thought through. And I understand if they put that in there because it needed to be there to make the drama rise and to make the complications go. But there's really no payoff for that. There's no reason. You could have taken that element out and just had him have the two kids or resurrect all three of them. And it wouldn't really change the story. It changes, like, there's one or two scenes where they address it, but not really. It's really confusing as to why that was in there. The other thing is they never really bring up the fact that even if you were to clone and put a copy, the original people are gone. And this act is, at its core, a very selfish act because you're not actually getting them back. You are getting replicas. They don't dwell on the fact that they're actually replicas. It's almost like, oh, they're back again. It's like, no, the originals are still dead. And that's a really kind of a heady question that you could contemplate, but they just throw that away. They don't even skirt. They just zip by it. They don't even think about what it could mean. I mean, I sit there and say, if I lost one of my kids, I don't know if I'd want a copy because that would just almost feel crass and it would almost feel not right or not even organic. So I think it really misses the boat on some real interesting contemplative stuff. The other thing it does is this could have been told out of sequence and it would have been far more interesting. But instead, you're just going to see it all play out as the trailer says it should play out, as opposed to like maybe making it from the wife's point of view. And that she suddenly realizes something's wrong and she starts asking him and she starts looking into it and she discovers that she herself is a copy. That would have been an interesting reveal. The problem is there's no way to sell the movie without blowing that reveal at a certain point. But at the very least, it would have made for a more interesting, compelling film. Otherwise, this one, it just feels like it's just going through the motions. I mean, I give it credit. And it also falls in a subgenre of science fiction. I love that subgenre of being a guy in a lab trying to save the world and do something great for the world, and then something goes horribly wrong. So it's so disappointing when you see a movie like Replicas, because it could have been at least kind of decent, but it's just sort of lame. So I have to say that Replicas kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Now it's time for me to tell you I've taken a bullet for all of you. And I finally plopped down some money and went and saw Holmes and Watson.
Sherlock Holmes. His methods are ingenious.
Right there.
He's a master of disguise.
What have you done with Sherlock?
Why, Watson?
I never left.
Amazing.
And his mind is brilliant. Solve this case in 4 days or I will kill the Queen.
Signed, Professor James Moriarty.
Come, Watson. We have a killer to catch.
That came out at Christmas. Now, I was out of town at Christmas. We took a Florida vacation. I got out of Dodge. Swam in the ocean on Christmas Day. I wasn't going to go to a movie. It was my vacation. So, I finally got around to watching Holmes and Watson, mainly because I was curious. Because it's getting such terrible reviews. I mean, it's like notoriously terrible reviews. Now, always right around the end of the year, there's always a billion movies that are released. And there's always one or two that kind of fly under the radar that people don't realize are even out. Like a great example was Daddy's Home. That came out under the shadow of Star Wars The Force Awakens. And that movie actually did quite well. Enough to warrant a sequel. But when it came out, most people were talking about Star Wars and nobody really paid attention to Daddy's Home, but it made a decent amount of money. And I'm thinking that maybe Holmes and Watson was going to do that. But Holmes and Watson was more like Point Break from that year that nobody went to go see and everybody hated. Now, here's the thing. I knew it was a comedy. You know it's a screwball comedy going in. You know it's absurd, silly, obnoxious humor from Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly. The tragic thing about Holmes and Watson is it's got a great cast. Like I said, Will Ferrell, John C. Reilly, Kelly MacDonald plays their housekeeper, Hugh Laurie playing Mycroft Holmes, you've got Rob Broughton playing Inspector Lestrange, you've got Steve Coogan in there. It's got a great cast. And the cast throws down. They deliver lines as if they're funny. They just really never land. Like, it's one of these weird movies where no jokes land. In a lot of ways, it reminds me of Yellowbeard, and I watched that a year or two ago, and I talked about it on the show. That's a movie, it wasn't a Monty Python movie, but it used several of the Monty Python actors. It had Graham Chapman in it, and John Cleese, and I believe you also had like Cheech and Chong in it as well, so it was this sort of amalgamation of comedy people from the 70s or early 80s. It has stuff that should be funny, and there's plenty of moments where you individually it could be funny, but it's just none of the jokes land, and that's the way I feel about Holmes and Watson. I mean, there's a whole scene with Will Ferrell and Hugh Laurie literally going head-to-head, and it should be funny, but it's not. I think it's a huge, massive misfire, but I didn't hate it either. It was kind of boring and pointless, but it wasn't excruciating. It's sort of like go back and watch like The Love Guru, which was the Mike Myers movie from 2008. That movie's unfunny and difficult to watch. It is distractingly terrible. Holmes and Watson's, this is not a get up and walk out kind of movie. I laughed at one or two moments, and it goes to show you that bad horror movies can still be fun to watch. Bad science fiction movies can still be entertaining to watch, but bad comedies are very tough to get through. And unfortunately, that's what Holmes and Watson is. So I'm going to have to say Holmes and Watson kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Glass and Close.
Shake that.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and hit the big one of the week, the only new one of the week, and that is Glass. This sequel to both Unbreakable and Split sees three extraordinary men who might be real-life superheroes in a mental institution.
The three of you've convinced yourselves you have extraordinary gifts like something out of a comic book. David Dunn. The only person to survive that train wreck all those years ago? You think you have superpowers?
It's a feeling. Vision. I have to touch them.
You believe you are a protector.
And yet, it is true.
I didn't talk about this specifically when Split came out because the whole tie-in to Unbreakable was a spoiler to that movie. I didn't want to talk about it then. I think I may have talked about this when it hit Blu-ray because I went back and watched Unbreakable, which I was never a fan of. And that's something that I differ from a lot of people. There's a lot of people who consider Unbreakable M. Night Shyamalan's finest piece. And it's not a terrible movie, but I just didn't particularly like it. And if you can go back and find my discussion of why I didn't like the movie, if you listen to some of my old shows, but the bottom line is I thought that it was hitting too many obvious points from The Sixth Sense. It was too much of a follow-up with saying it had to be a Bruce Willis movie and it had to have a kid in it and had to have a big twist ending, blah, blah, blah. I also never kind of bought the payoff, the whole idea that Elijah Price, Mr. Glass, had orchestrated all this just to say, well, if I'm extremely brittle, there's got to be somebody who's indestructible. It was such a far-fetched idea in such a narrow space of Philadelphia. It just doesn't quite work for me. And that's my big beef. And also, I thought it was a little bit grim. I thought it was overly, at times, nihilistic. I thought it was just too dark. And stuff like The Sixth Sense had a little bit more hope than this one. I've never been a big fan of Unbreakable, and I went back and watched it after Split came out and never was a huge fan. But I thought it was a neat idea to tie these together and to throw in Split, because I thought actually Split was an interesting movie. One of the things I thought was neatest about Split was it didn't actually rely on a twist ending. M. Night Shyamalan movies not having a twist ending is kind of a cool thing. But I thought James McAvoy was fantastic in that movie, doing a great job with all the different personalities. So bringing them all together, it kind of is neat. You got McAvoy, you got Willis, and you got Jackson all playing these characters, and I like the characters that they play. There's some things I think that are neat about this movie. First of all, like I said with Replicas, where I have one of the subgenres I love in science fiction movies is people in a lab trying to do something good for society and have it going totally awry. In horror movies or thrillers, I tend to like movies that take place in mental institutions. I don't know why. Those things, it interests me. I think that's kind of a cool thing. So this was already sort of predisposed for me to like, and I tend to like M. Night Shyamalan stuff. And I know that a lot of people like to malign him and complain about him and say bad things about him as a director. I still tend to like his movies. Not all of them. You know, like Last Airbender was terrible. After Earth was terrible, and The Visit, I thought, had problems with it. But overall, I kind of like his stuff. So I was interested to see this movie. When I finally did see it, there are some things about it that are great. I love the fact that James McAvoy throws down again for this movie. He does a great job with the roles. He does a great job putting it together. I think it has a neat setup. It gets them all together in a good way. Is it a spoiler to talk about whether or not there's a twist? Because in Split, there wasn't a twist. And I guess that was the twist, that there wasn't a twist. But this one, there are some reveals, we'll say. And some of the reveals are kind of interesting and really kind of cool. But, you know, kind of like the main one? That's the big problem with Split. It has, like I said, it has some great performances. And Bruce Willis does a good job in it, too. And I also think that it's neat that Shyamalan got Spencer Treat Clark, who played the kid from the original, to reprise his role as Bruce Willis's son in this movie. I think that's neat. I was like, oh, I didn't like the kid in the movie, but I think it's neat that they got him back as an adult and they just didn't recast, which is always something that I think is a bold move. The problem isn't most of the movie. Most of the movie actually works out really well. And by the time you get past the second act, you're like, ah, this is kind of cool. I'm curious to see where this goes. And even half of the last act is pretty good. But there's part of the third act that it completely falls apart during. And it just doesn't hold up. It doesn't have the oomph. And it thinks it's being more cool or clever. It's a little bit overly self-aware at times. And that's, I think, what always turned me off of Unbreakable. But it's just, it doesn't coalesce. It's coming together and just goes and goes everywhere. And it's trying to do something. And it's almost like Shyamalan was trying for an epic conclusion, an epic way to finish the movie, and he just sort of stumbled in the process. So I'm still going to say I kind of like the movie. It's just the ending's not nearly as good as it could be. And that's a shame, because that's sort of what M. Night Shyamalan's known for. But I'm still going to say that Glass kind of rocks, because it's kind of worth seeing.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about Close. Noomi Rapace stars as a bodyguard who is trying to keep an heiress alive after her father's funeral.
The terms of your father's will are explicit. That you take an active role in the company.
The shares, how much are they worth?
We need to assign you a new close protection officer.
Am I supposed to know who you are?
Sam, nice to meet you.
You should know there's been a recent increase in kidnap and ransom. You're great company.
I decided to proceed. Report only to me, understood.
Zoe, stay low, okay?
This is coming to Netflix. Actually, it's on Netflix now. You can watch it now. It's available. So turn on Netflix, start watching it. It's an international thriller. And I think it's interesting to cover these now and then, the Netflix movies, because not everything's going to be Bird Box. Not everything's going to be Bandersnatch. Not everything's going to be the next latest coolest movie that everybody's talking about. And now that we are in the dregs of release dates, you may not get the best and the brightest Netflix movies. They're going to save those for award season. And that's not to malign this movie. I think Close, actually, overall, it's an entertaining movie. I think overall, Close does what it needs to do. It feels more like a European thriller than an American-made thriller. I've seen a bunch of, it's sort of like a European direct-to-video or something that goes on demand that didn't have as big of a budget as you would have gotten in the States. For like a name behind it. I think that's kind of what this was. Now it works as just somebody trying to keep somebody alive, the bodyguard trying to save the target. And that works. Also, I gotta say, Noomi Rapace, I like her. I've always liked her, and I could watch movies of her kicking butt and taking names and shooting up bad guys and physically beating people up, even though she's about 5 foot nothing. I could watch that all day long. I think she could, honest to God, be as big of a movie star if she got the right franchise of films in America as, you know, somebody like Stallone or Schwarzenegger or Statham has been. I don't necessarily think she needs to be like the superhero or sci-fi route. I think she needs to go as just the tough guy, the female tough guy role. I think I'd watch it because that's the best parts of this movie is where she's the bodyguard and she comes in and she beats up the bad guys. Or there's a scene, the movie opens up with her guarding two journalists and embedded journalists in this war zone. And she has to take out these people that are trying to kill them. And she's pretty good in this. I mean, she's a bona fide kicking butt lady. So I really like her. There's slow parts in this. There's parts where they try to get too emotional. They're trying to show her with the PTSD and dealing with the problems that you have and all of these traumatic and violent and action filled situations. Those are kind of boring. And honestly, the whole explanation behind it, I thought was kind of weak. It never really coalesce, kind of like how Glass doesn't coalesce at the end. This one also doesn't quite coalesce at the end either. So it's still an interesting movie. But hey, if you've got Netflix, it's 95 minutes. Watch it. It's kind of cool. It's a new movie, and it's one of the two movies that are out this weekend. It just happens to be on an online distribution service. So I'm gonna have to say that Close kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to have a retro review of Freebie and the Bean, talk about the box office, and then the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Halloween. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about another movie, and this is an old one, way older than Replicas, way older than Holmes and Watson. This is Freebie and the Bean. Alan Arkin and James Caan play acerbic San Francisco detectives trying to keep a suspect alive for the weekend after a hit has been put out on him.
How in the world did you guys stay alive till now?
How do you get up in the morning?
A lady in a print dress,
you
sir.
You have to come in here to have a fight.
Please, lady.
She nearly knocked me down.
Where?
She went in there. Hey, you can't go in there.
I've spent half my life in toilets.
What was going through your mind? Indecent exposure? Are you insane?
I better get pushed off!
What are you doing?
I'm getting crazy up here.
intelligence squad? You're not fit to guard the fish at the aquarium.
I know, this movie's over 40 years old. It came out in, what, 1975? Something like that. And it got trashed by the critics. But for some reason, audiences around America dug it. And I'd never seen the movie. I'd never seen Freebie and the Bean. And I'd heard about it. I'd always been curious about it. But I mean, I knew the title. But I'd never seen the movie. And I'm like, let's spend 2019 filling those gaps, filling those holes of movies that get referenced or talked about that I've never seen. So let me educate myself in the pop culture. So I said, let me watch Freebie and the Bean. I couldn't find it on Netflix. I couldn't find it on Amazon. I ended up finding it on Vudu, and I spent $3 on this movie. And dear God, is it bad? It is a terrible movie. And I can see where people liked it. It's sort of like the movie Convoy. If you remember Convoy, which you know, Convoy was kind of playing off the Smokey and the Bandit feel of the 70s, where Smokey and the Bandit was about CB radios and trucks and cars and the police are the bad guys, the Smokey's the bad guy. But Smokey and the Bandit's a fun movie. It's certainly an enjoyable film. It's whimsical. It's silly. Jackie Gleason is part of the reason the movie works so well. Convoy has none of that. It just doesn't have the same charm, but it feels the same way. But I can see where people who wanted that counterculture movie that's not your typical squeaky clean hero type film, what was once in the drive-in, kind of finally coming into the, well, not even multiplexes, because you didn't have those at that point. You had 2, 3, 4 screen theaters back then at the most. I remember in Columbus, Ohio, where I grew up in the 70s, I think the largest theater we had was 4 at the time, 4 screens. And so that's the mainstream theaters. They weren't just drive-ins. And that's what made Convoy work. And I think that's kind of the same charm, I guess, that you could say Freebie and the Bean. But this movie is racist. It's homophobic. I mean, literally within the first 5 minutes, I don't even think the credits are done rolling, and they're throwing out homophobic slurs. And I mean, it's really unsettling to watch now. It's one of those movies from the 70s that you watch now, and it just doesn't land because it is so caustically homophobic, especially for a city like San Francisco. But anyways, I can respect Alan Arkin and James Caan's roles in it. I think actually Alex Rocco plays a pretty good sergeant. You hear him in the trailer there. But man, is it terrible. There's some interesting jokes here and there, and there's a great chase sequence. And I think that's the kind of thing that sort of sparked the audiences, is sort of the action sequences and the over-the-top silliness and craziness and absurdity. But, you know, it doesn't even have a good focus as a buddy cop movie. It's one of the first ones out there, but there's way better buddy cop movies. This one just doesn't know how to foil them against each other. They're kind of both too similar, but they try to accentuate these differences that really don't make sense. And it has trouble staying on its own plot. It at times, I don't even think the movie knows what the plot is. There's no like sequence of events. It's a very hodgepodge movie. It's like it's directed by Cheech and Chong, only without the drug humor and jokes. So yeah, it was an interesting watch. It was a nice little look back into the cinematic landscape of yesteryear. But wow, Freebie and the Bean is not a good movie. I'm gonna have to say Freebie and the Bean sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the box office. Last week there was an upset. It was a big surprise because The Upside beat Aquaman. And nobody was expecting that at all. I said it could. I said it might. But yeah, it not just beat Aquaman, it soundly beat Aquaman. It made over $20 million over the weekend, and Aquaman made $17.5 million. Now, that's not bad for Aquaman. It cracked $1 billion worldwide, and it's, what, the fourth weekend in release, and it's still making $17 million. That's pretty good. A Dog's Way Home was, I think, right on expectations with a little more than 11 movies. Replicas didn't even get into the top 10. But yeah, Upside was a big hit. It overplayed, and the thing that's interesting about that is because Kevin Hart got such bad press with the comments he made on Twitter and the fact he's not hosting the Oscars, I think what this shows is that his audience doesn't care. His audience isn't incensed by the comments that he made on Twitter that got him kicked off the Oscars. I think if anything that this thing shows, it's that Kevin Hart's audience is still going to be there for him. He still has a movie career. He's very viable. I think that he drew more people to the movie than either Bryan Cranston or Nicole Kidman. I think they just added gravitas to the show. So this is a big win for Kevin Hart, and it shows that he doesn't need the Oscar controversy or the lack of Oscar controversy to have a good career. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on Halloween. 40 years after Michael Myers went on a murderous rampage, Laurie Strode must protect her family when word gets out that he has escaped.
The bus crashed.
Michael Myers escaped.
He'll return to Haddonfield, his home.
I need to protect my family.
You have no security system, Karen.
Mom, you need help.
Evil is real.
There's a reason we're supposed to be afraid of this night.
I've been preparing for this for a long time. It is not safe to be on the street tonight.
Go home! Get out of here! Get inside!
He's here.
I was cautious going into this movie, and I remember in October, I was really nervous about it, but then I saw it, and I have to say, I liked this movie. David Gordon Green did justice to John Carpenter's original, partly by not trying to remake it. Yes, he does play a lot into the nostalgia, and he does make inside jokes, and he does make plenty of inside references, but Green tells a cohesive story, and it's worthy of a sequel. It's scary, it's violent, and it uses the suspense, and it doesn't pull the punches with Michael Myers. It also doesn't change things. That's one of the biggest problems that Rob Zombie does, is he made Michael Myers not into this monster that came out of an unsuspecting place. They made him into a white trash crazy person, which is easy to, an abused kid. Yeah, that's not a very far jump to maybe becoming a serial killer. Who knows? I'm not saying that all abused kids are going to do that, but that just seems like such an easy written situation. What was so terrifying about Michael Myers is that there was nothing that predicated this. And I think that David Gordon Green knew what he was doing. He had respect for the original, and he did a good job. Jamie Lee Curtis coming back for the series again, because she did it. This is like the third or fourth time she's done it, is great. I think it was fun. I thought it was a neat movie to watch. It was great to have it come out at Halloween. The Blu-ray, of course, it's kind of weird watching it in January. You want to watch it in October, but this is one of the better Halloween movies out there. I'm carving out Halloween 3 because that thing's so bonkers and weird on its own. But, you know, Halloween, the original's great. Halloween 2's fun. H2O's good. And then there's this one that's kind of certainly in the top 4 or 5 of Halloween movies off the series. Now, the bonus features has some things. It has deleted and extended scenes. So if you want to see a little bit more of what's going on in the movie and what didn't make the final cut, there's also a bunch of behind-the-scenes stuff. Back in Haddonfield is a documentary about bringing it back to life for the original Scream Queen, looking at, of course, Jamie Lee Curtis. It deals with the sound and how the mask was developed and just the legacy of Halloween. So it's not loaded with special features. I'm sure that at some point there's going to be a special edition, and I'm sure at some point they're going to package up all the Halloween movies in one giant bucket of blood and release them, and you're going to get some more stuff in there. But as it is right now, this original release and this original Blu-ray DVD combo is certainly a worthy Halloween movie. So I'm going to give that one a totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
The other movies that are new this week on DVD and Blu-ray include The Old Man and the Gun. Not about gun control. It's more of a whimsical story about Robert Redford playing a bank robber who just can't quit the business. Goosebumps 2, Haunted Halloween, another Halloween movie that's come out. And then Last Action Hero is getting a re-release in a VHS vintage box, as well as Crimson Peak getting a 2-disc special edition. And that's a really neat movie, a lost and often forgotten one from Guillermo del Toro. That's it for this week. I need to go. Next week I'm going to be talking about Joe Cornish's The Kid Who Would Be King. And until then, have a fat time at the movies.